Hello and welcome to Don't Miss a Beat, presented by Inside Cardiology. Don't Miss a Beat is a monthly podcast hosted by myself, Dr. Stephen Green, and Dr. Muthu Vadugunathan, providing a regular news roundup of the latest evidence and clinical trial insights across cardiovascular, renal, and metabolic diseases. Hosted by practicalcardiology.com, Don't Miss a Beat is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Welcome back to this month's episode of Don't Miss a Beat. I'm Dr. Stephen Green from the Duke Clinical Research Institute, and I'm joined by my friend and colleague, Dr. Muthu Vadugunathan from the Brigham and Women's Hospital. And I'm really excited about this month's episode. We're doing a little bit of change of gears this month. We're going to be talking about renal outcome trials and specifically eGFR slope. This is an endpoint that I think we are all increasingly seeing as an endpoint across, you know, cardiovascular, renal, type 2 diabetes trials. And I think it's really important for us all to really understand what this endpoint has to offer. So Muthu, I also know that we're very honored to have a special guest with us today. So I'll leave it to you for that introduction.
I'm so excited to welcome and introduce my good friend and colleague, Dr. Brendan Nguyen. He is an academic nephrology registrar from the George Institute of Global Health in Sydney, Australia. He's also a global expert in clinical trial methodology and kidney trials specifically, and very excited to welcome you to discuss this important issue of surrogacy in kidney outcomes trials. Welcome, Brendan.
Thanks, Muthu. Thanks, Steve. It's really great to be here today. Really excited to talk to you.
Excellent. So maybe we can start with the basics. You know, GFR slope is a relatively new endpoint, certainly for folks who aren't living in the world of kidney disease trials. And so perhaps you can just give us a brief introduction to what is GFR slope and does it actually have clinical applicability outside of the context of clinical trials?
So Muthu, even to just to take it one step back, one of the reasons why nephrologists have been interested in surrogate outcomes, in particular GFR slope, is because kidney failure and doubling of serum creatinine, which represents an approximately 57% loss of GFR, are late outcomes that occur uncommonly at a population level. And so trials that are seeking to detect treatment effects on these outcomes typically require large sample sizes or very long follow-up times. And what that has meant historically has been that trials have been limited to people with advanced CKD or people with very high risk of kidney disease progression. And to increase our ability to detect treatment effects in earlier stages of CKD, we need other outcomes that can assess treatment effects accurately. And that's where GFR slope comes in. Now, GFR slope, to put it simply, is the annual rate of decline in GFR over time. And in the context of a clinical trial, GFR slope is the difference between the active and the control arm in annualized rate of GFR decline over time. And broadly, you can think about GFR slope in three categories: the acute GFR effect, which is typically in the first 3 months of treatment, the chronic GFR slope, which is from 3 months to the end of the trial, and then total GFR slope, which encompasses the whole of the observed treatment effect over time.
Oh, that's really wonderful. Thank you for that context. Is there an expected GFR decline at the population level? Does everyone progress at a kind of a predictable rate?
So the rate of GFR decline over time varies substantially depending on who you're studying, which is what you'd expect. If you look at historical studies over time, people lose about 0.5 to 1 mil per minute per year of GFR after the age of 40. That's part recognized as part of healthy aging, but that differs substantially. So if you look at, for example, heart failure trials, which your audience would be familiar with, patients, let's just take, for example, DAPA-HF, patients on average lost about 3 mils per minute per year of GFR. If you look at Credence, which is a SGLT2 inhibitor diabetic kidney disease outcome trial, patients in those in that trial were at high risk of kidney disease progression. They lost about 5 mils per minute per year of GFR. And in another trial, for example, of IgA nephropathy, a dedicated renal outcome trial, patients lost up to 7 or 8 mils per minute per year. So that varies substantially depending on the at-risk nature of your population being studied.
Gotcha. No, thanks very much, Brandon. I think, you know, one of the things that pops into my head when I see the eGFR slope is the idea of surrogacy for surrogate outcomes. And, you know, in cardiology space, we've had a lot of experience with surrogate outcomes, and many of them, you know, present really a cautionary tale when we actually have, you know, power studies for clinical outcomes. You know, what are the data for, you know, the correlation between eGFR slope and actually some of these hard clinical outcomes? I know there's this very large, you know, collaborative meta-analysis that oftentimes gets cited, but what are your perspectives on that in the surrogate outcome piece?
So like in cardiology, Steve, we've been burned as well with surrogate endpoints. And, you know, the classic example of that is change in albuminuria, where trials that have looked at, for example, combined ACE and ARBs on proteinuria have actually demonstrated harm, hyperkalemia, acute kidney injury, but no benefit in terms of hard renal outcomes when those trials have been conducted. So albuminuria for us has been a cautionary tale. And part of that story has been that since 2018, the Food and Drugs Administration, the European Medicines Agency, and the National Kidney Foundation in the US conducted a large collaborative meta-analysis looking at all the available renal trials across different interventions and different diseases, looking at what the best surrogate outcome might be for kidney disease progression. And they looked at change in GFR or GFR slope as one of those surrogate outcomes. And what that collaborative meta-analysis demonstrated was that attenuations in GFR slope with treatment tended to predict benefits on clinical outcomes. And once you reach a threshold of about 0.75 mils per minute per year treatment difference in chronic slope or total slope over about 3 years, that correlated very strongly with the benefit on the clinical outcome and predicted with at least 95% probability a benefit on a typical clinical outcome such as kidney failure requiring dialysis. So there's good evidence in at least from kidney disease trials that GFR slope accurately predicts treatment effects on clinical outcomes. And for that reason, GFR slope is now being used as a primary endpoint in some ongoing kidney disease trials, particularly in glomerular diseases where you might not get the numbers that you might get in diabetic kidney disease.
Very exciting. So we're going to deep dive a little bit and get into the weeds here. So as with any kind of measure, there's often nuances with how we assess these outcomes and how we evaluate them. And with traditional trials, we typically assess endpoints at discrete events at specific time points or over time. And often we like in clinical trials when those endpoints are assessed in a fashion that's perhaps not model dependent, assessed kind of very cleanly based on the number of events that are reached at a specific follow-up time. In contrast, though, GFR slope is a bit model dependent and does have more nuances and may be calculated differently based on how you approach it. And perhaps the most striking variation of how it's estimated is based on those three kind of different time frames per se of how you assess it, of the acute, chronic, and total slope. So you've done a tremendous amount of work in understanding variation in treatment effects, especially in this acute time horizon. So perhaps you can share a little bit of your work. I was particularly impressed by your recent CKD EPI collaborative analysis, which I thought was quite impressive in collating data across a number of trials and interventions. So please, we'd love to hear your perspectives.
Yeah, Muthu. So What I've said is true, that treatment effects on GFR slope strongly predict treatment effects on clinical outcomes in general. But that becomes complicated when treatments have acute effects on GFR that differ from their long-term effects. And that is the case with many treatments in heart failure, cardiovascular disease, and kidney disease. Take, for example, very topical example at the moment, SGLT2 inhibitors, which cause an acute dip in GFR, which is a reflection of a reduction in intraglomerular pressure. But this is very different to the stabilization in kidney function that is observed over time with this class of agent. And the same can be said of ACE inhibitors and ARBs, of mineralocorticoid receptor antagonists. Even if you look at immunosuppressive agents, cyclosporin as well has that, and tacrolimus has that effect. So many treatments will have short-term effects that differ from their long-term effects. That has implications for study power if you're using GFR slope as a primary outcome. It has implications on which portion of GFR slope you take as your primary outcome, whether that's excluding the acute effect or living with it, but then factoring in that power effect, that effect on power over time on total slope. That is something that continues to be an area of investigation that we look into, not only in the renal trials, but in other disease states like heart failure.
Oh, that's so interesting. And I think, you know, in cardiology for a while with our RAS inhibitors and whatnot, and I mean, of course, nephrologists as well, we've been always thinking about this acute slope, I mean, acute changes in GFR after initiation of therapies and, you know, what that potentially means. And, you know, as a simple cardiologist, not all potential AKIs are created equal or negatively prognostic. So I think it's really coming up very relevant with the SGLT2 literature, as you're noting that, you know, again, we consistently see this acute reduction in GFR, but yet the longer term renal benefits and actually improvements in GFR slope. But one of the things that I also noted, I think, in your study as well, is that you identified some patient groups that seem to be more prone to this reduction acutely in GFR. And, you know, patients that, again, us as cardiologists need to have, you know, don't discontinue these medications. Don't worry about this. But any patients that are particularly prone to these acute effects in GFR and then what that kind of means for that patient population?
Well, Steve, when you look at the totality of the data from the CKD Epi Consortium, the acute effects tend to be larger at higher baseline GFR. And that kind of physiologically makes sense because you have extra nephrons to play with. There might be a degree of hyperfiltration. And so at a population level, the acute effects, particularly acute negative effects, tend to be larger at higher baseline GFR. When you get down to a GFR of 30, there's tends to be a less of an acute effect. And that's certainly what we saw in CREDENCE. There was actually no acute effect when you get to a GFR down 30 on average. But the thing is, at an individual level, there's still substantial variability. So we're talking as trialists here, but when, you know, thinking as clinicians, that variability is quite substantial for individual patients. And it's actually quite hard to predict at a clinical level.
And Brendan, you know, to assess a GFR slope, we need repeated measures of GFR and collected over time. And sometimes that may vary by timing of measurement, as well as maybe subject to missingness of data. And so how is missing data handled when we estimate GFR slope in trials, especially when that data missingness may be somewhat informative, may be unbalanced by the treatment arm?
You raise a good point, Muthu, because typically in randomized trials, we look at the primary intention to treat is the most robust assessment of the treatment effect. For dichotomous outcomes, when we look at GFR slope, what has been done so far has been using on-treatment GFR values. Now, the reason that's been done is because of the acute hemodynamic effect of many therapies. So once you come off a randomized treatment, your GFR might change acutely. So that will affect the GFR slope. So there are a lot of things to still think about when using GFR slope as a potential outcome. I don't think it's going to replace hard outcomes in terms of level of evidence from a clinical perspective. It's always easier to be much more certain. You're always much more certain when you see a trial that has a treatment effect on a hard outcome. But I think what it does is it allows us then to potentially study other disease states or other populations where we may not have sufficient power to assess treatment effects on hard outcomes. And I think that's a particular area of interest is heart failure, because of the importance of CKD for treatment decisions and prognostic benefits. It's really important that we take the opportunity in trials to understand the effects of therapy on heart failure, for example, but also kidney disease progression at the same time.
That's a good segue back to our, you know, initial thought on surrogacy, surrogate outcomes in clinical trials, because I know you are part of the leadership for the FIND CKD trial, which is studying the nonsteroidal MRA finerenone, and, you know, again, trying to implement, you know, this as a primary endpoint to, you know, streamline trial design. So what are your thoughts on the FIND CKD trial? And again, you know, practically using this as a major and primary endpoint in clinical trials for kidney outcomes.
Thanks, Steve. So I think for your listeners, FIND-CKD is a trial that is it's a kidney disease trial. It's evaluating the effect of finerenone, a non-steroidal mineralocorticoid receptor antagonist, on kidney disease progression in people with non-diabetic CKD. So a range of glomerular diseases, hypertensive or ischemic nephrosclerosis, and other non-diabetic kidney diseases. It's aiming to recruit about 1,600 people with proteinuric non-diabetic kidney disease. And its primary outcome, as you mentioned, is total GFR slope over about an average of 3 years. This is possible. I think this trial's been made possible because of all of the outstanding work that Leslie Inker and the CKD Epi Consortium have done to demonstrate the robustness of GFR slope as a surrogate outcome in kidney disease populations, but also because finerenone has already been tested in non-diabetic kidney disease in about over 10,000 people and demonstrated that those trials, Fidelio and Figaro, demonstrated that finerenone reduced the risk of kidney disease progression by 23% and cardiovascular events, predominantly heart failure, by about 15% or so. So we've got good evidence already of safety and efficacy in a related population. And I think then it makes sense if we're looking at an expanded indication in a different population than to use GFR slope. So I think it's probably a really good example of where GFR slope might be helpful. We've got information on efficacy and safety for a particular agent that's indicated in kidney disease, and now we're looking at expanding that indication to other populations, and I'm really excited about the trial. Actually, we'll also in FIND-CKD assess the effect of finerenone on, you know, your traditional kidney disease progression outcomes, 57% decline in GFR or doubling of serum creatinine, along with kidney failure as well, and importantly, cardiovascular events and heart failure.
Very exciting. Congratulations, Brendan. Looking forward to those initial trial results. I think conceptually, I cannot agree with you more that the framework of FIND-CKD and the positioning alongside the Fidelity program in diabetic kidney disease is critically important. And I think that framing from a regulatory perspective, that you have 13,000 patients that have been treated, that this drug has been shown to be safe, at least based on the trial protocol, and that can be translated to an adjacent population with a validated surrogate to potentially show that you can extend the benefits of this therapy to another population. And similarly, we've seen that in other disease states as well. In heart failure, less so. We've been less able to embrace valid surrogates in heart failure. However, there have been examples. For instance, sacubitril valsartan has been studied in large randomized clinical trials in adult patients with heart failure, powered for clinical outcomes, including cardiovascular death. But in an extension to a pediatric population of heart failure, where endpoints such as hospitalization and death may be fewer, and so those studies are unable to be sufficiently powered for those clinical outcomes. In fact, the FDA did accept surrogacy based on NT-proBNP to extend the labeling to a pediatric disease population. And I understand finerenone is also being studied in a pediatric kidney disease population based on UACR changes. And so I think that, you know, this concept of as long as you can demonstrate in a primary population safety, that this drug is not going to cause excessive harm when introduced at the population level, then extending to adjacent populations may be a reasonable approach while guided with surrogate endpoints such as GFR slope. So in the last few minutes, I kind of want to take a look forward in terms of let's fast forward to the day that you close out FIND-CKD. You are very excited, hopefully, and you're looking forward to translate and disseminate those findings to the broad community, including the kidney disease community, but also the broader public. So how do you actually communicate GFR slope? You know, is this an understandable endpoint to the broad public, but also to patients? Will patients be able to readily embrace GFR slope, or is this really just a nuance in trials that we're using to kind of streamline trials and extend to adjacent populations?
Thanks, Booth. I think you touch on a really interesting point about implementation of therapies and what constitutes convincing evidence for clinicians and patients and their caregivers. So I think when the way that we discuss GFR slope at the moment is really in the context of clinical trials, that's where it's most useful at the moment. Certainly in a clinical situation, when you speak to patients and they ask about their kidney function, it can be really valuable to graph their GFR over time. I often do that in practice. And visualizing that is a really powerful way of demonstrating kidney disease progression. And I think that's really important. There are a lot of other tools that can help with decision-making at a clinical level. For example, the kidney failure risk equation is a really useful practical tool that many people use in practice that visualizes your risk of kidney disease progression. When you look at, but it's different to a clinical outcome where you can say, oh, this treatment reduces your risk of kidney failure by 20%. It has a slightly different framing and messaging. And I think it's one thing to get for regulators to approve therapies based on GFR slope. That conversation with clinicians and patients is a different one. But I still think using GFR slope is a kind of terminology that comes naturally to patients and clinicians. And I would argue much more than change in albuminuria, because GFR is directly on the biological pathway to kidney failure. Patients intrinsically understand that. So I think change in GFR or GFR slope is a much more patient-facing outcome than change in albuminuria.
Oh, that's very interesting. And as a heart failure cardiologist, I know a lot of my patients really, resonate the ejection fraction number and, NT-proBNP numbers. And it's really interesting to hear your perspective on, eGFR for the kidney patients, really something that they fixate on and maybe help communicate, the clinical benefits that are possible with some of these newer therapies. So implementation, I think, is the next path forward with now so many, evidence-based therapies for both heart failure and CKD, and really a blending of these different comorbidities together in terms of the therapies that are available to help patients. But Brendan, I can't emphasize enough, how much I've learned by listening to you for the last several minutes. And I'm sure our listeners have enjoyed this conversation as well. I think, eGFR slope is going to be an increasingly, utilized endpoint, both primary and secondary exploratory endpoint for both, cardiovascular, renal, type 2 diabetes trials. So I think, you giving us a thorough education on this today is very, very helpful. So with that, I really do want to, again, thank you very much, Dr. Brendan Nguyen, for joining us today on this episode of Don't Miss a Beat. I also want to remind our podcast listeners that all the Don't Miss a Beat podcasts are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and practicalcardiology.com, your home for the latest and clinically relevant news and information impacting cardiology. Well, thank you again for joining, and look forward to speaking with everyone next time.